The police report, Fred Martin, registration 19121, appearing on behalf of the appellant, Martin Lauder. We're here today on appeal of the trial court's order dismissing a court action that came out of a family court dispute, or family court proceeding. I know the court is aware of the facts as to having read the brief. There's a couple things which I think are critical to where we were proceeding in the court action. The basis for the court action was essentially interfering with father's parenting time and his ability to act as a parent by obtaining an ex parte order that not only the change of physical custody, but also suspended father's parenting time. The fact that the order was obtained ex parte is crucial to the court litigation itself. As argued in the family court before the tort court, the ex parte order was improper, it was unlawfully obtained. You cannot obtain a change of custody, a change or suspension of parenting time on an ex parte basis. Due process requires notice and requires a hearing. There was no notice, there was no hearing before an order was entered. The order was used to not only remove a child from the father, the appellant, but also to keep the father and the child from having a relationship for a number of years afterwards.
Assuming you're correct that obtaining an ex parte order can be a tort, when was the tort committed? When was the tort allegedly committed by the defendants?
This gets into the statute of limitations issue,
which is the only issue in front of us.
Well, that's one of the main issues.
When was the tort committed?
Yeah, I would say that the tort was committed when the attorneys for the mother and the mother filed the motion to change physical custody and suspend father's parenting time ex parte.
And that was in, I forget the year, but like 2008,
2006? That was 2007, I believe.
Okay. 5 years before you filed this lawsuit.
Correct.
And what was the change of custody order, it was implemented almost right away, wasn't it?
I believe it was.
So that's when the damages arising from the order occurred. It was also 2007.
That's when father became aware of it, and that was the one of the instances of damages. Yes.
So the tort occurred and the damages occurred in 2007?
The initial one, yes. Okay. The state limitations obviously is one of the major considerations. And the question is, when did the statute of limitations start to run? When did it start to accrue? The appellate position is actually in the alternative, but the main position is it didn't start to accrue until the family court entered an order determining that the ex parte order changing custody was void ab initio for violation of due process.
So another order by the court completed the tort? That's your theory?
I wouldn't say it completed the tort, Your Honor. I would say that until that order was entered by the family court making the determination that the ex parte order was unconstitutional, was void, that father was unable to pursue an action against mother or mother's attorneys for the bringing of that.
Why? If it was a tort when it was committed in 2007, why couldn't you bring a tort action then, if it was a tort at all?
Well,
but I'm not saying it is, of course.
I think the problem in his bringing an action then was that the order gave mother physical custody and suspended father's parenting time. So he had no parenting time to complain that he was being deprived of. There was a 2007 matter, and there was also further denials in 2007, there was denials in 2010, 11, 12, all the kind of followed and proceeded out of it. So there's several different incidences of denial occurring in time.
Why did he take no action before November of 2011 through the DR case to address that then, if it was believed that he had no other cause of action except through the DR case until the DR court found the ex parte order void?
Frankly, to answer that question, I would have to bring in matters that are not part of the record. This case was dismissed on the pleadings. There was never an answer to the pleadings. There was never any affidavits in the context of summary judgment. There wasn't discovery. There wasn't a trial. There's missing that.
Right. But there's nothing in the record that points to there being anything that was done by the defendant's appellees to prevent that from happening. Correct?
I think what the record indicates, and it's within the complaint itself, in 2007 and 2010, there was representations by the mother that father could have contact with his child. One at a child daycare, and the other was in delivering presents at Christmas time in 2010. That's all that there is in the complaint, but what that indicates is the parties were having communications up to that time, that they were certainly working or trying to work on the situation. Beyond that, I can't honestly represent because it's not part of the record. And I don't want to make those kinds of representations. We haven't had the opportunity to really develop a record, develop a trial to proceed forward with the case. As Judge Richman has pointed out, one of the interesting problems is, okay, why didn't the appellant do something, sue the appellee and her attorneys back in 2007 when they obtained this ex parte order? That kind of goes the cart before the horse. The order is presumed valid. To sue for a violation of his parental rights at that point, he would have to establish that the order at that point was void. If he had done a tort action back then, in essence, he would have been doing a collateral attack on the family court's judgment, which, and the case of James versus James, that was one of the things that was brought up with the Colorado Supreme Court there, that, and this was in the context of a will and invalidating real property that had been attempted to be transferred before the decedent passed away, and then later on coming back and looking to set aside that transfer. The parties couldn't set aside that transfer until there was determination that the will was invalid, because under the will they took nothing. By analogy, the ex parte order, the father did not have his custody been suspended. He didn't have any parenting time. How can you go and do a cause of action for denial of parenting time when on the face of it you've got a order that's presumed valid saying you have no parenting time, it's suspended? He had to first tackle the issue of the order and it being invalid, and then can pursue the other denials of parenting time that occur. The statute of limitations issue it applies for 2 years. There were denials of parenting time that occurred December 2010. That was within the 2 years, clearly.
Denied by whom?
Denied by mother, the appellee.
What do you mean, just, what do you mean denied? She just refused to present the child to the father? Voluntarily?
Yes.
There was a motion made to change the parenting time in 2010?
No.
He just asked, and she said no.
He, for what the I'm going by the pleading, because it's all I have to go by here.
Right.
A arrangement was made where father was going to go to mom's house at Christmas time, 2007.
Right, and she went to New York.
Right.
What did the attorneys have to do with that? Was that a tort by the attorneys?
I'm not aware the attorneys had anything to do with that.
So that doesn't save the claim against the attorneys in terms of statute of limitations, does it?
No. The attorneys were involved, however, in 2012, at least one of the attorneys. That's current counsel, Mr. I always had a problem with his name, Chipolala. In 2012, there were three separate attempts to have to exercise parenting time. All three, two were made by the appellant, and one was made by myself acting as his counsel on his behalf to exercise parenting time. All of these occurred after father had technically met the requirement of that ex parte order by presenting himself to the family court. They were post-presentation. So if we were to assume that order was valid, which it wasn't, then after he presented himself in family court, his parenting time was no longer suspended, but yet his parenting time was denied. The requests were denied. One immediately following the hearing at which he appeared, his summer vacation under the parenting plan, not only his request was denied, but through counsel's request, it was denied as well.
And you're claiming that was a separate tort that occurred in 2012?
Yes.
But there was a court order then, was there not, in the DR case, that once he did appear before the court, the domestic relations court said, we'll decide the issue of parenting time later, even though I found the ex parte order to be void ab initio, I'm not reinstating parenting time until we have a hearing to decide what's in the best interest of the child.
I'm not sure that was
a court order at that point that prevented any change to the status quo until there was a further hearing.
Your Honor, I think the order was that the court was not going to order a reinstatement.
No, I think specifically the court order was the court declines to order immediate resumption of respondent's parenting time without consideration of the best interest of the child consistent with CRS 1410-124. Respondent shall set the matter for hearing.
Correct. And my response, Your Honor, is I understand that the judge was not willing to order reinstatement. Logically, the parenting plan that was entered at the time of permanent orders provided for parenting time, provided for parenting time. The only thing that interfered with that was that ex parte order. Once that ex parte order was determined to be void ab initio, then the only order that was governing was the permanent orders, the parenting agreement of the parties, which provided for parenting time on notice, which provided for the equal parenting time. That is what became valid and in effect at that point. The family court judge essentially was saying, I'm not going to order a reinstatement, which kind of begs the question of what was there that you've already declared the order void, so we resume to the initial parenting plan. What is going to not be reinstated?
So what alleged tort was undertaken by the attorneys after the order was found void of initio? Was there another denial of
Yes, that was two instances, I believe, that happened in June of 2012, seeking parenting time.
That was before the order was vacated in August.
Okay, I'm sorry, I misunderstood. No, there was nothing after the order was vacated. I think the logic is that an order, it was declared void. Does that mean that it was valid before? It was declared void at an issue? So it was valid technically. The permit orders were valid all the way through from inception. The order suspending it technically was invalid. Therefore, there was a denial of parenting time throughout.
So the tort was in 2007, more than 2 years before the complaint.
2007, 2010, 2011.
But those were more than 2 years before your complaint was filed. That's the problem.
2012, Your Honor.
Okay.
I'll reserve.
Actually, you're out of time, Mr. Martin. Sorry.
Good afternoon, my name is Cindy Fleischner. I represent the lawyer appellees. I want to address, before I get into what I prepared, the questions the court asked of the appellant's counsel. To answer your question, Judge Richman, the statute of limitations started to run on or about January 8, 2007, when the order was entered, or around that time when the appellant received notice of it, when the mother went to Iowa and with law enforcement obtained the minor daughter. We argue in our brief in the alternative that the latest it could have started to run was February of 2008, when the appellant father admitted to the family law court that he knew of the mother's actions before the family law court with respect to, I think he says, changing parental rights, something like that. To answer your question, Judge Ashley, no acts by the lawyers were alleged in the complaint or the amended complaint as to a continuing violation that might restart a statute of limitations. So what the appellant's counsel spoke to was matters outside the record and matters which I do not know. So they are not contained in the record as to any other violations. The record contains the plaintiff's complaint, appellant's complaint, father's complaint, and essentially 10 different exhibits that he attached to the complaint, which are not the complete record from the family law court. Just a few minutes ago, you heard appellant's counsel for appellant admit that the order of January 8th, 2007 is valid until the court ruled that it was no longer valid. The appellant did not have to wait for any court finding, any court ruling that that order was void ab initio. And you can look to clear Colorado Supreme Court law on that. The Dean Witter Reynolds case, Morrison versus Goff, I think if you look to Rance versus Kaufman, those tell you that when a tort occurs and it occurs against an opposing party's lawyer, it starts to run. Now, the Supreme Court has said in Stone versus Satriani and in Versey versus Vinton that bringing lawsuits against lawyers has a stricter scrutiny. The Colorado Supreme Court was particularly worried about exactly what happened here, that attempts by one party to disqualify another party's lawyer might occur through a backdoor. And that is what happened here, because if you look at the record, in 2012, after the family law court found the order void ab initio, the court then ordered the parties, mother and father, to go to mediation. And father, through his counsel, refused to go to mediation, saying that there was essentially a conflict of interest by the mother's attorneys, my clients, and that he wasn't going to talk to them in mediation because he had filed suit against them. That is contained on the record before the family law court. The family law court judge said, that's not within my bailiwick, and you're going to go to mediation. and then there was argument on the record. And the argument on the record is exactly what our Supreme Court was worried about. Whether it be disqualification straight up, I'm going to file a motion to disqualify you as counsel, or disqualification through the back door, that's what occurred here. In terms of the case of James versus James, that case is entirely inapplicable to the facts here. The case was a Supreme Court case from 1924, and I believe the appellant used it to argue that a cause of action does not accrue until after there has been a final determination of the rights of the parties. First, the order voiding the ex parte order did not determine the appellant's ownership interest, without which he would have no standing to sue, which is what was found in James. And second, even if the limitations period could be told during the pendency of other litigation, the appellant did not challenge the ex parte order until, the plaintiff did not challenge the ex parte order until way past the limitations period expired. So, I think I have addressed the arguments and the questions the court raised, except for one that Judge Ashby, you raised, which has to do with the court's order with respect to parenting time. What the court order said, and this court correctly noted, the family court wanted reintegration because the father had moved to Iowa and was not present in the child's life for many years. And so the court wanted reintegration, which according to the record that is present before you, has not occurred. And I don't know whether it has or it has not, but as of the time of this filing of the lawsuit, it had not occurred. So as far as we know, as of the filing of the lawsuit against the lawyers, father, appellant, had not gone through any reintegration counseling with his daughter. I hope that addresses your question, Your Honor.
Did the complaint allege any conduct by the lawyers within 2 years of its filing that amounted to tortious conduct? That is, other than what happened in 2007? Did it allege a continuing pattern of torts or a continuing tort?
Not that I recall. Let me tell you, Judge Richmond, there is one claim that was not dismissed by the statute of limitations, and that is the equitable conversion. Claim. So I don't want to avoid that, but no. So to answer your question as for tort, no. It's our position that the statute, the trial court got it right when this action was dismissed. The statute of limitations barred six of appellant's claims, and equitable tolling does not apply to the dismissal of those claims. The court also incorporated, it had comments on one page of its order, and then it had another five-page order, and in it the court also granted the motion to dismiss on litigation privilege, limited grounds, relying on the Supreme Court decisions, prior Supreme Court decisions. The trial court also granted the motion to dismiss based on Rule 12b, failure to state a claim for relief. And finally, this court can also affirm on any grounds that were presented in the trial court and that are as a matter of record. And one matter that the trial court could have based its decision on was the appellant's failure to file a certificate of review. And the appellant who sued the lawyers for conduct arising out of their professional conduct did not file a certificate of review. We moved to dismiss based on that, and the court granted on other grounds. But that is clearly in the record that you have, and you can uphold the ruling based on those that motion too.
You only represent the lawyers, is that correct?
That is correct.
And in the trial court below, you only represented the lawyers, correct?
That is correct.
Was the mother represented?
She was.
And were the claims against her also dismissed?
Yes.
Are they on appeal before us?
I thought they were.
Where's the mother's lawyer?
I do not know. I do not know that, Judge Richard.
But I'm sorry, the dismissal order was... The problem I have with this dismissal order is that all it really did was incorporate something that you guys prepared and filed for. I mean, there's a short minute order, but it seems to deal mostly with the claims against the attorneys and nothing with the claim against the mother. But your position is that the claim against the mother was also dismissed. Otherwise, I guess we would not have a final appeal of order, would we?
Correct. In the record, Your Honor, and I cannot tell you the page because I didn't think that that was actually something you were going to ask me.
I wasn't until I just started looking at
it. Right. There is an order dismissing the claims against the mother. And Mr. Waters from Colorado Springs filed a motion to dismiss and also a reply, and the court entered a separate order dismissing the mother. That's all I know. As the court recognized when appellant's counsel was presented his argument, the appellant waited from January 8th, 2007, or sometime in 2007, when the mother came to Iowa to get their minor daughter, who was 4 at the time, and return her to Colorado. The Colorado Family Law Court had jurisdiction over the matter. He waited from that point until November 28, 2011, to object to the court's order granting the ex parte motion. And the court, as I think Judge Ashby noted earlier, Magistrate Trujillo interlineated his own handwritten comment, which was that parenting was suspended, but that the father could get in within 48 hours notice at any time to the court. So all the father had to do, if he wanted to see his child, was get a hearing within 48 hours and get back to see his child. The appellant did not do that.
How does that bear on the issue of when the claim for relief arose, though? I'm not sure it does.
It does not. But I just wanted to orient the court briefly to the factual background of what occurred. I think as to the conversion claim, it was clear from the court's order that the lawyer defendants never had control or dominion over the child support arrearages. At the time the mother went back to court, there was approximately $19,800 in child support arrearages. A writ of garnishment was issued, it was served, and the child support payments went directly to mother. Lawyer appellees never had custody or control of that money, never saw it. So the trial court did get it right in terms of the conversion as well as the statute of limitations claims. If the court does have any questions, I'd be pleased to address them. Otherwise, thank you.
Very good. Thank you both for your arguments this afternoon. This case will stand submitted. We'll get your opinion in due course.